This is part two in a two-part series. Please listen to part one before listening to part two. This series discusses drug use, violence, autopsy, and crime scenes. Listener discretion is advised. This is The Fall Line. Last episode, you met Sonia Perez, one of the seven children of Cherokee Finley. Cherokee, who was originally from Louisiana, spent most of her life in the northwestern United States. She, her children, and her second husband divided their time between two states, where they lived on or near two reservations: the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Flathead Reservation in Montana, or the Puyallup Reservation in Washington. As for Sonia, except for some time in her early childhood, when she lived with her biological father's parents, her first 11 years were spent in her mother's care. She considered her stepfather to be her dad, and she had a close, if sometimes volatile, relationship with her mother. Sonia says that she and Cherokee had similar personalities: loving, stubborn, and tough. They were both willing to take care of everyone. She credits Cherokee for teaching her to have an open and loving attitude toward people in need. Her mother was always willing to open their home to teenage runaways or anyone who needed a meal or a warm place to sleep or just a little safety. Sonia has continued that tradition herself and raised her children to do the same. But her childhood had some elements of chaos, too. There were substance abuse issues in the home, and while she felt her mother was capable of caring for her siblings, she wanted to remove herself from the environment and some of the experiences that she encountered there. Sonia purposely became a ward of the state at 11 years old, and she spent the next 7 years in various group home placements. Because Sonia would often leave these placements without express permission, she was labeled a runaway and sent to a locked facility at age 15. While she was in the system, she maintained regular contact with her mother and the rest of her family. Cherokee, who was religious, wrote that she was praying for Sonia's safety. That was a comfort that kept Sonia going through some of her lonelier times. Spirituality and prayer was a way that her mother showed her love to her children, and it shaped her worldview as well.
When I was raised on the reservation in Montana, there was only Catholic churches. We were baptized as Catholic. We went to church every Sunday. Oh, even if we were late. And if we were late, and she'd sit there and she'd pinch your ear if you'd talk or be disruptive or loud. And we did spend a lot of time in Montana with the pastors and the nuns, where they would come and pick us up from our parents' house, and they would take us out to a movie or take us to the church for, you know, something to, like games night or something. That's another trait that I have of hers. I've embedded the Lord into my children. I went to church. I didn't go every single Sunday. I belong to a Hilltop Christian Center here in Tacoma. I became a member back in 2002. I became a member of this church, went through their membership thing and everything. And that's where my daughter was baptized at. That's where I took my children for Sunday services or Wednesday night Bible study. And I'm a very faithful woman. I believe in prayer. So that was something, my mother doing those things, I think, instilled that in me. And my kids, my daughter, husband's mother is a pastor. You know, they're very faithful. My son and his wife are very faithful individuals, and kids are always inviting me to come and visit their churches that they go to.
You've talked about your mom's generosity and compassion towards others. Do you think that's what appealed to her about the message that she was getting when you guys would go to church?
I think that it was something she wanted us to know about. I know my mother believed in God, and she believed in the Word, and then she would have her her days that were a little rougher, but it was something she really wanted for all of us.
As we told you last time, Sonia graduated high school while in the state's care. Her mother attended her graduation, and they remained in contact as Sonia moved to Tacoma, Washington, and began her independent adult life. She soon gave birth to her first child, her daughter, and Cherokee was there to support her. After Sonia moved to Oregon and gave birth to her second child, her son, her mother moved in to help her with the kids. At first, things were good. Cherokee was sober and was wonderful with her grandchildren. But she and Sonia had similar personalities, and Sonia found herself clashing with her mother over the running of the household. Ultimately, it came down to control over everything. What music to play, what to make for dinner. Mundane things. Sonia wanted to be in charge of her own home, and her mother wanted to parent them all. After a particularly bad fight in early 1998, Sonia decided that her mother needed to return to Montana. She bought Cherokee a Greyhound ticket, and they parted ways. It was a fraught time, and they wouldn't speak for the next 3 months. Sonia still regrets that. Sonia stressed to us that though her mother would sometimes go off on her own, the family would actively look for her, and they were concerned whenever they couldn't find any sign of Cherokee. The only time she wasn't with her friends or staying at her usual places was when she was avoiding her family. She'd be avoiding them not because she wanted to go permanently missing or remove herself from the family unit, but because she wasn't sober. But her children and her other relatives still looked for her. And with the help of their church and other community members, they would eventually track her down, whether she was on the reservation in Montana or nearby. No matter how long it took to find her, Cherokee always returned home. But not in April of 1998. Weeks passed, and there was no sign of Cherokee Finley. Though her siblings were searching, Sonia, back in Oregon, wasn't fully looped in at that point. Sonia's sisters were sure that they'd find their mother, so they didn't file a missing persons report. They figured that she was out with friends, like she had been in the past. They even called Sonia to see if they'd heard from Cherokee. She hadn't, not in 3 months. But even at that point, she wasn't aware that her mother was gone. Sonia thought that she'd have a chance to see her again. It wasn't until April 29th, 1998, that the news finally came. That day, local law enforcement began to inform Cherokee's children, one by one, that their mother had been found. Not returned, but discovered, in the woods. Local hunters had come upon her body. Sonia's family didn't have a chance to inform her. Someone else called first. Last time, Sonia told us that she was at work in late April as a newly minted armed guard. Her phone rang. It was her daughter's father, whom she never spoke to. He told her about Cherokee, found in the woods near a creek. None of it made sense. She didn't believe him. She had to call her uncle before the news truly hit home. Sonia's lieutenant took her off active duty and confiscated her service weapon and ammo. She said that she was removed from what she described as armed sights for 9 months after receiving the news of her mother's death. The grief was simply too much. Sonia's cousin bought bus tickets for Sonia and her oldest child, her daughter, to go to Montana for the funeral services. Sonia's godmother, Kathy, picked them up at the bus station.
My godmother, she stayed with me. She did not leave my side. If I was at the longhouse, at the viewing, staying awake with my mom during the wake services, or she'd take me back to her house and let me clean up. She helped me with keeping everything together. I played that Mama song by Boys to Men at her funeral services. It had just come out, and I was feeling really bad. And I wanted her to hear it. She didn't like that kind of music, so I waited till she was gone and she couldn't tell me no. And I played the mama song for her. It was really a difficult time.
While Sonia was in Montana, she was determined to find out more about what had happened to her mother. She was concerned, she told us, that Cherokee's death might not be investigated. This was based on both historical and current factors, that her mother was Native and found on the reservation, but also because Cherokee had been arrested in Lake County before. She'd served jail time, and she'd alleged mistreatment during that period. Sonia was able to piece together that Cherokee had left one of Sonia's sister's homes with a significant amount of cash. From there, Cherokee had purchased a car. That's the same vehicle that an elderly woman would later report selling to Cherokee when she saw the story of her death on the news. And then what had her mother done next? She would have been at parties or bars with other people, not alone. As soon as Sonia and her family heard the details of their mother's discovery, they were confused. Though their father had hunted and fished, Cherokee was afraid of the deep woods and of water. She was not one to venture out into the forest of Montana, and never alone. So Sonia and her siblings wondered how or why she could have ended up in such a secluded area near a body of water. And once Sonia saw the scene for herself, she had even more questions.
A couple of hunters went back the next morning. They found her body about 8, 9 o'clock. They were going back and looking for a wounded deer from the night before. And they stumbled across their mother's body instead. And then that unraveled all from there.
You went to the scene?
When I got off that Greyhound, I insisted to be taken to the site she was found at.
Last episode, we told you that Cherokee's death was primarily attributed to hypothermia in the autopsy and records that we reviewed. We checked the historical weather records, and temperatures were low enough in April of 1998 for hypothermia to be a very real concern, especially for a person left exposed to the elements for an extended period of time. But that doesn't explain some of the other issues, the ones Sonia has pointed out to us, which are also evident in the documentation that she's collected. Was the assumption made that Cherokee wandered out into the woods when it should have at least been considered that she was left there? Or, as Sonia put it, dumped. Cherokee was discovered partially clothed. While this is something that can occur in people who experience hypothermia, called paradoxical undressing, it doesn't explain the missing car or her missing runaway bag. How did she get there? Why was she there? Or, of most concern to Sonia, why was she bruised? We were unable to determine the extent of Cherokee's bruising from the paperwork. It is noted in the autopsy and other documentation, but not detailed. Sonia, though, has copies of those seen photos, which, in her opinion, show extensive bruising, not just on her mother's legs, but on her torso and other extremities. Sonia still has copies of these photos in her possession. Sonia noticed another physical detail that she does not have photo evidence of, her mother's broken fingernails. She says she saw those in person when she helped prepare her mother's body for burial at the longhouse on the reservation. Sonia recounted this personal experience to us via phone call. She says when her mother's body was released to the family by the county coroner, medical gloves covered Cherokee's hands. When Sonia removed those gloves, she saw that her mother's fingernails were broken and her hands were injured and dirty. Sonia actually removed embedded rocks from the palms of Cherokee's hands. Detritus from the forest still clung to her. Sonia felt that these were signs of defensive injuries. And there was something else, too. Sonia described photos of the scene of her mother's discovery that, in her opinion, showed a purposeful and strange formation. She said there were sticks, a feather, and a ring of cigarette butts laid in a circle around Cherokee's head where she lay on the forest floor. She said these elements were still present when she visited the crime scene later to record the area with her camcorder. She says she chose to collect the evidence that remained after the authorities left the scene. Some cigarette butts were taken into evidence, as per the official notes we read, but Sonia says that additional ones remained.
Do you still have those cigarette butts?
I'm sure they're downstairs. I have videotapes that I took my camcorder. I videotaped it. It was weird because where her head laid right above her head was a perfect circle of cigarettes with a stick in the center of the circle. Like somebody has sat there and watched her suffer. Her clothes were draped over tree branches and stuff. Her head was from 10 feet from water. I have the evidence list. There's things that are in the pictures that's not on the list, on the items list. There's items on the list that aren't in the photos. The timelines, who was there, who wasn't, and all of the reports was described. I have a legal-sized notepad where I have all my notes. And like I said, all that stuff's locked in the safe where I went through and I was just writing down all the discrepancies and the things that didn't add up. And then it became too much to deal with my emotional aspect and to actually focus on that. So I put that in a safe and it's been there since. And then I got into some intensive counseling and really tried to help myself heal, because when I lost her, I was lost. She took a lot of me with her.
As we told you last time, to our knowledge, none of the evidence found at the scene was tested for DNA, though Cherokee herself was swabbed for semen. Those swabs tested negative. After her death was ruled accidental and the case was closed, the matter was considered finished from an official viewpoint. However, the community was still discussing it, and Sonia's family had begun to hear rumors, consistent ones, that a number of local men had involvement in Cherokee's death. There was gossip of a confrontation happening at a house in a nearby town and Cherokee's ultimate disposal in the woods.
I mean, there's all kinds of stories all over. I don't personally know who these people are. I've heard their names, but I still don't know them. My siblings know what happened, apparently. There's six guys. Come to find out, there was a house in Woodcock, which was a town with nearby a housing neighborhood. I guess there was blood in the basement, but nobody checked it out. And they burnt the couch out in front, so she put up a fight. I've seen my mom. She won every fight she was in.
Has anyone talked about what they think might have been a motive, any kind of reason?
No.
The most information Sonia's siblings, who still live in the area, have managed to get is that these men had issues with Cherokee and felt comfortable enough to brag about their alleged involvement. As far as Sonia knows, none of the men were ever formally questioned about possible involvement in Cherokee's disappearance or her death. The paperwork that she has access to and shared with us includes a supplemental report from the Montana Department of Justice that lists a case closure and clearance date of May 1st, 1998. That's just 2 days after her body was discovered and 4 days before her burial. When the case was officially closed with the other investigating agencies, we can't say, but they provided the official autopsy and cause of death ruling. A year after Cherokee's death, Sonia returned to Montana. It was time for a traditional memorial.
We did the one-year memorial where we unpacked everything and at that point gave her belongings away to different family and friends. And I made the decision that I didn't want to live in Oregon by myself anymore. So I moved back to Tacoma, Washington in 98 to be with my family after I lost her. I blame myself for her passing. Like, what if, you know, she would have stayed? Or, and I was really struggling at that time, and I really needed all the family I could get.
Sonia has had to cope with further loss. Her father passed away in 2003. He'd been in poor health for a long time, following a brain injury and brain surgery. Since then, her family has had to face many more deaths that have brought her back to Montana. Each time, she's also reminded of the death of her mother and her own certainty that it wasn't an accident. In the next section of interview, Sonia discusses a call that she got a few months after she'd gone to see one of her sisters back in Montana. She'd known that it would be their last visit. At her dying sister's request, she'd helped to arrange a DNR, a do not resuscitate order. When her sister passed away, Sonia's remaining sisters wanted her to come back home for the funeral, but she was having a hard time with it. So they involved her Auntie April.
And I didn't really want to go to the funeral services because I went down and I spent a week with her a year before that to say my goodbyes and remember her like that. So the three sisters that I have alive know that I still highly respect my elders as well. So all three of them made three phone calls to my Auntie April, who then called me and said, I'm not asking you, I'm telling you you're going. And your little mama, they need you. They need you in this time. They're going to need you to hold it together. And so when I got there, I cornered all three of my sisters in the kitchen and I called them little snitches. I said, don't let that happen again. Don't be snitching me out. I said, well, sis, that's the only way we could get you to come is if we told Happy April. But no, I know my mom is proud. I mean, I support them and I'm there for them and I try to help when it's needed.
Sonia has continued to mother her younger siblings through their own hardships, including loss. But the lack of resolution in Cherokee's death and what they consider to be her murder still weighs on them all. They fear that the case will never be reopened or re-examined. And even if it is, what evidence remains? Sonia isn't sure. Montana FOIA laws are more complex than in most states we've encountered. They involve a judge's ruling and caution that requests may take months to process. With the involvement of four agencies, gathering a complete, or as complete as possible, documentation of Cherokee Finley's death would probably take years. But based on what Sonia has been able to obtain, several key aspects continue to disturb her, and she hasn't found satisfactory answers to them, no matter how hard she's looked.
It's never going to be resolved. Nobody will ever see justice. We won't see justice from any of them. And that's why it's so important for me to honor her with a headstone and just try to move forward. I know there was some new FBI agents hired in Montana, and they were really interested in my mom's case. And I'm all for it. I can give them whatever information I have. She was my star. She was my hero. And people that don't know my family, they don't understand why I feel that way. But if you only knew how amazing she was, we all have flaws, right? We all have things that we're not proud of. That woman is straight my hero, and I'm going to fight for her till my last breath. I am hoping that she's resting peacefully, even though justice has not been in her favor. But I hope that she rests very, very peaceful. And I believe in prayer, but I'm also talking to my mom And I always am given a sign, whether it's in my dream. You know, I've had her visit me in my dreams, and I just hold her very much alive in my heart. I'm proud of you, my girl. That's what she said to me in my dream. Before she faded off, she said she was proud of me. Nobody can understand why my love is so deep for my mom with everything that I'd been through. It's just that she's been my rock. The only thing that is different from me to her is I'm not dependent on a narcotic. She made me the best mother I could be because I am blessed with two beautiful children. My daughter will be 30 this year. My son will be 25 this year. And they're both living on their own and they're both married. And I have a granddaughter that my son has given me. And I have two beautiful children out of it and a wonderful granddaughter. So I really, really, really love my mom and wish that I could tell her face to face to thank her for making me the best mom I could be. Because had I not been through the things that I went through, I wouldn't have been a very good mom. She has touched so many lives. There are meetings that go on with the MIW over here. That's why Carolyn will call me. She's like, man, people just asking questions about your mom. I did a Zoom thing for her because she said that she felt that it was for me to tell my mom's story. Yeah, I've been able to speak up. My daughter went to a dedication where we dedicated a silhouette in my mother's honor at Fireman's Park years ago. The crazy thing about it was my mother was 46 when she was found, and at that time I was about 46. Here I am, 51 years old. I'm older than she made it. I'm healthy with no terminal illness. It's got to be her strength. That's all I know. It's got to be her living through me right now. Because I couldn't ask for a more blessed life. And it's been my honor to stand up and speak for my mother since she can't speak for herself.
The following is an excerpt of what Sonya read about her mother at an event dedicated to missing and murdered Indigenous women. It was a silent witness silhouette dedication ceremony. Our mutual friend Carolyn DeFord asked Sonya to write the piece from the perspective of Cherokee to be shared as a silhouette was dedicated. I was a daughter, sister, mother, auntie, and meemaw. I moved back and forth from Montana and Washington, living on the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Reservation and the Puyallup Reservation. I raised 7 children and would often open my heart and home to anyone in need. Runaways, throwaways, and anyone that came in off the street was welcome to food and a safe place to stay, and I never asked for anything in return from them. In April 1998, I went missing from my family and friends. My loved ones made countless attempts in trying to make contact with me, but any information that led to my whereabouts was always a dead end, and any leads to my whereabouts were unsuccessful. Approximately 3 weeks passed before my daughter and a tribal law enforcement officer walked into another daughter's place of employment to notify her that my remains had been recovered. A couple of hunters had hiked back to look for a wounded deer and instead found me badly beaten, 10 feet from a stream or river. Both woods and water are a deep fear for me and would have been the last place that anyone who knew me would have looked. My death was ruled as accidental. There are many stories on the Flathead Reservation about how I died. Due to democracy, there will never be closure for my loved ones, and no justice will be served to another Native woman found in the woods.
I think I want to do social work. I'm gearing towards and leaning more towards social work. And my heart, my compassion for others, I just want to get it out there and share it. It's what my mother would want. And I know she looks down on me every day and sees the awesome work I do with other people. And I know she's proud. I know she's proud that I am making a difference like she did. May not have been a healthy difference what she did, but it's the caring and compassion for others. Not everybody has that quality, but yet everybody needs that quality. Everybody needs, that's a need for everyone. I don't care where you come from. If there's something I can do, I'm going to help. That's just who I am, and I just know she's shining down on me for that.
Cherokee's voice continues through Sonia in other ways, too. Sonia sees it in her own work. In recent years, she's worked in the mental health field, but she's considering going back for another degree, one she thinks her mother would have particularly appreciated.
I think I want to do social work. I'm gearing towards and leaning more towards social work. And my heart, my compassion for others, I just want to get it out there and share it. It's what my mother would want. And I know she looks down on me every day and sees the awesome work I do with other people. And I know she's proud. I know she's proud that I am making a difference like she did. May not have been a healthy difference what she did, but she cares. It's the caring and compassion for others. Not everybody has that quality, but yet everybody needs that quality. Everybody needs, that's a need for everyone. I don't care where you come from. If there's something I can do, I'm going to help. That's just who I am, and I just know she's shining down on me for that.
Sonia and her siblings, her aunts and uncles, and all their loved ones hope that Cherokee's case might someday be reopened or receive a second look from another agency. Right now, though, they're focusing their energy on raising money for a headstone for her, which they hope to have ready in time for her 25th anniversary memorial service. They've established a GoFundMe to pay for the headstone, which we have linked in our show notes. Right now, there's just a small metal plate to mark her burial plot, and they want to replace that.
I want to honor her with a very, very beautiful headstone. They'll start looking at them. She's deserving of it. I want to honor her for making me the woman that I am today. Because without her, I wouldn't even be here breathing.
She also honored her mother by continuing to research her mother's family history. Sonia's grandmother, Cherokee's mother, didn't want her children to identify as Native. As Sonia points out, it was a complex situation, steeped in racism, governmentally sanctioned and societally ingrained, that her grandmother faced. But one result was that Cherokee and her siblings were left without connection to their maternal history. So after her grandmother's death, she's done what her mom, Cherokee, wasn't able to, not without upsetting her own mother. Work with an elder relative to recover their family documentation and follow that line directly to the Natchitoches tribe of Louisiana. That research is continuing and unfolding many branches of their family tree and connections Cherokee had longed for in life. It would have made her mother happy to have those ties. That's one thing Sonia knows for sure. If you have any information regarding the death of Lily Cherokee Finley that would aid in or prompt a reopening or second look at her closed case, you can contact missingmurderednativeamericans@gmail.com. Sonia is currently planning a headstone ceremony for her mother and is raising money for that headstone. The headstone setting ceremony will be held on May 5th, 2023 in Montana. You can find a link to contribute in our show notes. If you know of a case that should be covered on the Fall Line, there's a link to the case submission form in the show notes too. Thank you for listening. The Fall Line is a fully independent show, and we appreciate listener support. It allows us to do research, obtain FOIA, pay our content advisors, and support and donate to the causes we care about. If you try out the products we advertise, please use our sponsor codes. It really helps. And if you'd like to support the show and the stories we cover, join us over on Patreon. We're raising Patreon funds to continue to fund the Millbrook Twins billboard and to build a therapy fund for families who've been on the show. Each and every one of our patrons helps us continue this work, and we're so grateful for your help. On Patreon, you can get early release ad-free versions of our regular episodes, plus blogs and videos for only $5 a month. We've also added occasional live streams, which patrons can enjoy starting at just a dollar. The Fall Line is written, hosted, and researched by Laura Norton, with additional research by Brian Waters, Kim Fritz, Kiana Burgess, and Michaela Morrill. Interviews by Brooke Hargrove. Produced, engineered, and scored by Maura Curry. Content advisement by Brandy C. Williams, Liv Fallon, and Vic Kennedy. And, as always, our most special thanks to Angie Dodd. Currently, our monthly donation is going to Private Investigations for the Missing. Please, join us in supporting this nonprofit. They need funds to help families access the services of PIs.